Stay tuned for The Lynn Show. This summer, I've been rebroadcasting some of the interviews I've done over the last few years. These interviews are with remarkable artists. Artists who have something unusual or unique or special. Last month, I played interviews with three different men, all of whom came from working-class backgrounds where they were not only not expected to be artists in some cases, they were actively encouraged, or should I say, discouraged from becoming artists. And yet, these men countered their history, their personal families' beliefs, the, in some cases, serious obstacles, and pursued what was clearly their passion, clearly their desire, clearly their, the work of their lives. This month, I'm playing interviews I did with musicians, all of whom discovered that they were musicians by the time they were three. Pretty remarkable. In this show, I'm playing the second half of an interview that I did with Mike Markovarich, an amazing jazz pianist, even more amazing because he not only found music at three, he started life completely blind. So, here, the second half of my interview with Mike and more of his extraordinary music. Hang on. Here come the show.
Hearing from an inner voice, finding choice where there's no choice. Prodding from the voice, oh, you really can. Deeper, deeper down you dive, where the child's gone to survive. From nowhere, sitting in my own soft lap, with all the time for us to chat, and my resources all on tap.
Hello, and welcome to The Lynn Show. The Lynn Show is all about you. Not the you you think of as you, but the you that you are hiding, even from yourself. We all have the you we present to the world. It's made up of all of the qualities which, like it or not, we have accepted as part of ourselves. All of those qualities which we are aware of, some of which we show to the world and some of which we don't, but never mind, we know them as ourself. I call that our cover story. You know, much as a spy has a cover story that it presents to the world, but it's not the entire story. Well, same is true for all of us. We have a cover story and the qualities and abilities and capacities and beliefs that are contained in the cover story. They are true. They are us. But generally speaking, they are not the whole truth. There's more to us than that. There are other abilities and skills, capacities, beliefs, which we have learned very, very early in life were dangerous for one reason or another. And they caused us embarrassment or teasing or punishment or neglect or abandonment or, in some cases, trauma. So those qualities which we learned very quickly were not going to bring us something we wanted, we put them under cover. And I believe that pretty much all of us have qualities undercover. Depending on the challenges of your childhood, some of us have more things undercover than others. But all of us have some. Hypersensitive to what our parents tell us about who we are, have to be, should be, and the way they react when we are not those things, we begin to carefully tailor the person that we come to believe is all that we are. This show is dedicated to the premise that you can find and reclaim some, hopefully many, maybe all, of the pieces of yourself which you had to hide undercover. It takes energy to suppress this, even if you're not aware of it, and we want you to get that energy back. But more to the point, if you had to hide undercover your capacity to be assertive, because the first time you stamped your feet and said no to mommy or daddy, you learned in no uncertain terms how that was going to go over, well, you may very well have decided it was too expensive to have that quality, and so you hid it underground, undercover. But now you may very well need that quality. And hey, you still have it. It's just undercover. Now let me say here that figuring out that you have a quality undercover, even discovering what it is, even surfacing it and wanting to use it, doesn't mean that it will be that easy to surface. I know that that can be problematic. I talk about that and how you do it, not only in the show, but also in my book, When You Can, You Will, Why You Can't Always Do What You Want to Do and What to Do About It. If you go up on my website, you can get the book, and actually you can download the first chapter of the audiobook. One of the ways to discover what you have hidden undercover is to trust your intuition. Those flashes that we get, those hints, those unexplained ideas that suddenly pop into our head, or thoughts, or memories, things that we're drawn to, or dreams that we remember, well, we call that intuition. And our unconscious can use intuition to highlight for us where we have hidden special and sometimes quite necessary aspects of ourselves. So, if you believe me, and I hope that you do, that the chances are good there are parts of you which you have hidden undercover. And if you are curious, willing, courageous enough to go looking for these qualities, then one of the places that you will find help is in your intuition. And talking about trusting your intuitions, I'm going to begin the second half of the interview I did with Mike Markovarich with the last thing I played of the first half, in which he tells us so clearly that he hears an instruction to honor his intuition, to follow his love of playing the piano. And trusting that against the largest odds made all the difference. Here I'm thinking of, you know, the road less traveled. Certainly Mike followed the road less traveled, and it made all the difference. So before I play that interview, I'm going to play a cut from the CD he gave me. The CD is called Solid. The particular tune I'm playing is called Where Are You, and features not only Mike on piano, but Tony Martin on drums and Billy Pilateri on bass. And following this gorgeous track, I'm going to play the second half of the interview with Mike Markovarich.
Sophomore year, I really prayed hard and thought hard about what it was going to mean to try to embark on a music career. Mm-hmm. And as sure as I'm sitting here, one night I was debating what to do, tossing it and turning it around, you know, in my mind. And as sure as I'm sitting here, I heard this voice. Michael, I know you're way behind the eight ball compared to people who have played piano seriously for 10 or 12 years and had studied a lot of theory and all that. But you have the means to do this, and I will see to it that you are able to do it if you just plunge into it.
Oh, Michael.
So I said, okay, there's my answer. That's all I need to know.
Oh.
I'm going to do it. I'm going to give it the best shot I have, and wherever it leads me, at least I will have been able to say I gave it the best shot I could.
Right.
So I ended up graduating in 1971 from Dartmouth College with distinction in music major. Got a real good music history and music theory background, mostly. But my junior and senior years, I got a chance to study with some jazz musicians who were artists in residence at the time, which was just great. I got a chance to study with Dwight Mitchell, mm-hmm. the pianist. Mm-hmm. I don't know if you know him.
I don't know him.
Wonderful pianist. Mm-hmm. And his bassist, Willie Ruff, taught him a jazz history class. Mm-hmm. My senior year at Dartmouth, that was. And then in my junior year, I studied with Don Cherry, the cornetist.
Yeah,
the jazz
he is.
What a character. But I learned a lot from him. You know, his approach was more into the free jazz and just somebody start something and the rest of you jump in and put something together from that. You know, it was a lot in that vein.
Mm-hmm.
So I got some exposure to that. And then after Dartmouth, I lived at home with my parents for a while and went back to went to a small college in Nashua called Riviere College, and I studied more classical piano,
mm-hmm.
and form and analysis, you know, more music theory.
Right.
Then I went very briefly to the Berklee College of Music, one day a week for one semester, and I studied jazz, piano, and improv there.
Mm-hmm.
Jazz, piano and jazz theory there. And then my next major move was the University of New Hampshire in 1974.
My goodness, this is years and years and years.
Yeah. Yep, and during my studies at UNH, I studied classical piano and played jazz gigs on the side when I could. and I did that as much as I could. And got a chance to study jazz piano with one instructor toward the end. But then in 1978, I graduated with my master's in music, my MA in music from the University of New Hampshire.
We're looking at 10 years from now, right?
Yep. And if you count the time I started playing when I was 3 years old, you figure that in, you're talking almost 30 years.
Yeah, right.
And then in 1978, I moved to Cape Cod, and that's where I spent the first 10 years of my full-time career.
Mm-hmm. What made you go there?
Well, it's an interesting story. I was playing a wedding reception somewhere, and one of the people that was there ran a restaurant in Falmouth, Mass. Mm-hmm. Liked my playing and invited me to move down to the Cape once I finished my degree.
Oh.
And play a 5-night-a-week position down
there. Well, so you so graduated right into work.
Pretty much. Mm-hmm. In June of 78, I started my Cape Cod career. Played at Molly's Restaurant in Falmouth and then the Kuna Messed Inn. And, the place is the Bobby Burns Hyannis Pub and the Asa Bears House in Hyannis, the Paddock Restaurant, Dunphy Hotel.
You must have thought you were going to stay there.
I thought for a while. I thought it was going to be a place for a long time.
Yeah.
Well, 10 years is a fairly long time.
Yeah, it is.
But in about the mid-80s, the economy up there really started taking a hit.
Yes, it
was hard to even get a gig playing solo piano anywhere, let alone with a combo.
Wow.
That pretty much dried up a lot. Mm-hmm. So, and again, another interesting thing happened. Two friends of mine who listened to me a lot on the Cape had a winter place down here in Bradenton. In 1988, they invited me down here to visit, and they, before I came down, they did some sleuthing around to see what the music opportunities might be like here, and as it turned out, there was a place on Main Street, which was looking for in Sarasota, which was looking for a pianist to play 5 nights a week.
What?
Horse Feathers.
Oh,
it's
my God.
No longer here.
I know. It's that other thing on the corner, right?
It was a great place.
Yeah.
And they had, so I came down here and visited my friends, the Chandlers, and for about 10 days, and I auditioned at Horse Feathers, and I got the job.
Mm-hmm.
So, and within about a month after that, I sort of packed things up and, with the help of my dad, we moved me down here to Sarasota, and I got oriented. He stayed for about a week or a week and a half to help me get situated, learn my way around downtown enough so I could get around on my own, which there's another challenge of being a totally blind person in a sighted world.
Unbelievable.
And by the time he left, I knew where, you know, a few restaurants were in the bank that I was going to go to for do my banking in the post office.
Where
were
you going to live?
While I was living, at the time I was living in an apartment on South Osprey Avenue.
So you were close to downtown, so you
very
could walk?
Very close. I could walk everywhere.
Yeah.
Which was wonderful.
It's wonderful.
Yeah. It really is wonderful. And I got hooked on the weather down here very quickly. I came down here in November of 88 and I said, it's in the 70s, it's in the 80s, I can wear shorts like I am right now.
Yeah.
And I said, I like this.
Yeah, just coming from...
from Cape Cod. Yeah. Though New England winters can be pretty hellacious.
Yes.
So I started playing in Horse Feathers and 2 months later, due to lack of business, it closed.
Yeah.
And here I was, I just moved down here. Oh, man. One gig ended. Well, again, I had sat in a few times at the Gator Club while I was playing in Horse Feathers. Once I got done, I went over to the Gator Club and sat in a few times. And they had a jazz policy there, 6 nights a week then.
Oh, yeah.
When Jay Foley ran it.
Yeah.
And the bass player that was playing in a combo then was Ernie Williford, who I still work with every chance I can.
Mm-hmm.
He's been not only a fun person to play with, but he's been a friend and very helpful too, you know, when that's been needed.
Mm-hmm.
He's a great guy and he's a lot of fun to work with. And well, he was in this combo at the Gator Club at the time, and the manager at the Gator Club knew what was about to happen at Horse Feathers because he said to me, "Well, if something happens at Horse Feathers, and I can." It's a small town, you know. A lot of people know what's going on.
Yes, they do.
Especially if they're in the same industry.
Oh, yeah.
They're
all watching.
Sure. And so he said, if something happens at Horse Feathers, you've got a job here, because I've been thinking we've needed to do something with the trio here.
Uh-huh.
So Horse Feathers closed on a Saturday night. I went over to the Gator Club, and the manager was true to his word. He said, I'll tell you what, we have jazz here Monday through Saturday. How about you start Monday night? So I didn't even miss a night's work.
Oh, my God.
So that,
so it does seem like you've been...
just been in the right place at the right time. And, you know, there's no way of knowing that.
Well, but you trusted that it would be, didn't you?
Well, it was a little scary for a while. I mean, when those things happen, it is a little... so it can be a little unsettling.
No kidding.
But ultimately, usually when one door closes, another one opens sooner or later.
Mm-hmm.
And... Ernie and I and various drummers, mostly Louis Firkovich, played at the Gator Club for 17 months, six nights a week. Then we played over Coasters at Coasters on Siesta Key for 11 months.
Mm-hmm.
And I played at Michael's on East for about 5 years.
Mm-hmm.
And now I'm at Caragiulo's Thursdays and Fridays and at Euphemia on Sunday nights.
Uh-huh.
So those are my steady jobs.
Mm-hmm.
Now, besides that, I play a lot of assisted living facilities at various times, various days, on a varying schedule.
Yeah.
Depending on what they want, how they want me to fit in, and I'm always looking for concerts and, you know, that kind of work.
And you teach.
And I teach. Mm-hmm. And I've done recording, too.
Yes.
So, it's a busy life. It's a very busy life, but it's been very rewarding. Challenging, yes. Scary at times, yes.
Yes.
But I don't regret deciding to do it at all.
No.
I don't really don't regret it.
And, I want to say again that something that you clearly never lost was this, optimism, positiveness.
Well, pessimism gets you nowhere but in worse trouble.
Yeah.
It really does.
No, I agree.
It saps your energy, something wicked.
Mm-hmm.
And the last thing you need, if you're going to be doing something creative, is to lose your energy.
No, that's
because that's where it comes from. Is the universal manager? That's where it comes from. You know, whatever you want, choose to call God,
higher power, the force,
or the higher intelligence, or
yes, you're right.
You know, everybody has different ideas about what they want to call that, or whether they believe in that or not. I definitely believe in it.
No, well, you heard from it, didn't you?
More than once. More than once.
Uh-huh.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah.
For sure.
You know, one night you sat in at Baco's.
Yes.
Oh, my God. Oh. And you did that thing that I imagine you do a lot, where, you know, one song to another, to another, another, and culling this and reaching out. What do they call that when you
use throw
a line?
In quotes from...
Yeah, quoting, right.
Well, quoting is one word for it.
Right.
And the a jazz term that they use for that, at least when I was studying jazz history back in my college years, is interpolation.
Interpolation.
Yes.
Yes.
It means placing, juxtaposing something from another piece of music in the piece you're playing.
Yes.
That's
yes.
What it means. And it could be a short quote.
Yeah.
A little short excerpt, or it could be more than a short excerpt.
Yeah, and that night, you did a great deal of that.
I do.
Oh, you do, and it was, I mean, you can hear the audience just erupts over, you know, because they recognize it, you know, they know you've gone someplace else.
How do you fit that in?
Yeah, right, and they're so delighted. It's so...
Well, the thought process as nearly as I can figure out how that works for me anyway, is that I'm constantly, when I'm playing, I'm listening to the chord changes a lot.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I'm trying to think of something that will fit,
mm-hmm.
even if it fits loosely, even if there's some jagged notes, some off colored notes. If it doesn't fit, I'll bend it.
You will.
Yeah. You know.
So, well, you know what they say about jazz, that if you hit a wrong note,
keep playing it.
Keep playing it.
It's going to sound right.
That's right.
Yeah. There are really no wrong notes. There are all kinds of choices.
That's
though. And that's the beauty of jazz, is that it really is, as many times as I've played a lot of the standards, I've never stopped falling in love with the standards.
Mm-hmm.
I really think, I'm convinced in my teaching experience also, that one thing that if you're going to try to show somebody jazz piano, you should show them how to play the blues, and you should try to show them how to play standards first. Mm-hmm. Before they go any other direction.
Well, I'm delighted to hear it, because, of course, as a singer, the standards are
Ah, they're class. They're timeless.
They're timeless.
They're timeless.
They're timeless.
Absolutely timeless.
That's right. It's odd. I was having this conversation with Charlie Prodzik.
Uh-huh. You know Charlie? Yeah, I know Charlie.
Yeah,
sure.
I'm sure you did.
I know him, and I think he's a wonderful player.
He's a wonderful player.
Mm-hmm.
He's a wonderful player, and he's a wonderful accompanist.
Yes, he is. Yeah. And I enjoy that, too, when I get the chance to do it.
Yeah. I've never sung with you, I don't want to speak to that.
No, but we'll have to do that.
Sometime. I certainly hope so.
I'd like to.
Yes, so would I. And Charlie and I were talking about the standards, and I was saying, so my listeners are going to hear this again twice now, that a lot of pop and rock singers, as soon as they possibly can, they make albums of standards.
Rod Stewart. There's one example.
Oh, yeah.
Linda Ronstadt.
Linda Ronstadt. And these are exactly the examples that I gave. Right. And so it's like, you know, these songs, musicians love them.
And there are good reasons for it. I mean, you know, when you think about the repertoire of people like Cole Porter and mm-hmm. Gershwin
right.
and Rodgers and Hart and Jerome Kern and Dietz and Schwartz and
Frank Lesser. And, Rodgers and Hart.
Yeah.
Did you say that?
Rodgers and Hammerstein.
Rodgers
even
and
the
Hammerstein.
Show tunes. A lot
right.
of the show tunes are wonderful jazz vehicles.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And it's because the melodies make sense.
Yes.
The average listener can grasp what the melody is. Can also grasp what the basic harmony is, as long as it's reasonably played.
Mm-hmm.
And you can go from there.
But it's interesting. The harmonies are interesting.
They are.
They're not complicated. You know, they're not difficult, but they're interesting.
They're interesting enough.
Mm-hmm.
And if you have some jazz techniques under your fingers and some jazz theory, you can plug in some substitute chords, which can make it even more interesting.
More interesting. I agree.
The stuff is so timeless that... it's as timeless as Bach or Beethoven or Chopin,
mm-hmm.
you know, but it's a different idiom, that's all.
Right. Well, and then, of course, the lyrics.
Ah, the lyrics, yes.
They are lyrics.
Yeah, they're wonderful lyrics. And you can actually understand what they mean.
Right, exactly. That's exactly right. And they're interesting, you know,
Yes, absolutely.
So, and again, as a singer, you know, the lyrics are so important to me, so.
Yes.
Well, sure. Yeah.
They are.
Well, Mike... This is so lovely. This is also incredibly interesting to me. So I always like to, as we're sort of ending,
mm-hmm.
To ask whoever I'm interviewing if there's anything that I forgot to ask or that you would like to talk about or that you have to say about life in music or almost anything that on your mind.
I can honestly say that one of the things that I enjoy most is playing concerts.
Mm.
Either solo or with combos or in any number of configurations.
And why?
Well, lounge work is one thing, and it serves a very valuable purpose, okay? And,
yeah, but people don't really listen.
Well, some do. I mean, you get some that do and some that don't.
Mm-hmm.
But when you're playing a concert, they are there for one reason. They are there to hear you do what you do.
That's right.
And that is the ultimate satisfaction.
Yes.
For me as a performer, if I can play a concert.
Yeah.
I love playing concerts in churches or concert halls or whatever, wherever I can, you know, that's suitable.
Well, okay. So you're listening and you have a concert venue, Mike is available.
For the right price. assuming that it fits into the calendar and all that stuff.
That's right, right. That's great.
But I do like that, and I enjoy, you know, working with, as I say, other musicians and solo and the whole small combo thing mostly. That's what I've done is smaller combos.
Mm-hmm.
But it's all fun. It's all fun.
It's all fun.
Mm-hmm.
And actually, I mean, I think I've said this now a number of different times in different ways. That is the thing that comes across so strongly when you play. It's not only the virtuosity of what you're doing, which is staggering, but it's that it's fun. And it's so it makes it so delightful to listen to.
Well, you know, Oscar Peterson had a lot to do with it.
in
my Cape Cod years, I had the privilege many times of listening to Dave McKenna, who I think is really also one of the top players in that genre of jazz.
Mm-hmm.
And Then I got a chance to study with Dr. Billy Taylor for a couple of weeks in 92, and he gave me enough stuff to work on to last me two lifetimes.
I know.
But he's just, you know, he's a wonderful player, too, and a wonderful educator.
He's a wonderful man.
Mm-hmm.
In the late 60s, I was working in the Bronx, and he had this traveling...
Yes, the Jazz, the Harry Van, the Jazz
I forgot
mobile.
What it was called, the Jazzmobile, right?
Jazzmobile, yes.
Right.
Yes.
Well, I was in the Bronx then when he was doing that.
That must have been wonderful.
Oh, it was wonderful.
Oh, what a great player.
And really, I mean, what are we talking about now? That was late 60s.
60s. And
right.
You know. He was, Debbie and I, my wife, Debbie and I went to hear Billy Taylor at Van Wezel a few years back. That night, he played The Man I Love. And we were both sitting there, and Debbie said very quietly to me at the beginning as he was playing, the first time through the song, she said to me very quietly, "He's doing all that with his left hand." Oh my God.
Oh my God.
I mean, he was all over it. He was playing the melody and the chords, all with his left hand and moving around.
Oh my God.
With his left hand alone.
Oh my God.
And my jaw dropped. I couldn't believe it because it sounded so complete.
Yes.
And so rich and full and interesting. Mm-hmm. Of course, then after that, he went to playing it the more conventional way.
Right.
But those are things that I get ideas from when I hear people do things like that.
No kidding.
I like to try to do that once in a while. I don't know whether I'm quite up to his, but he's got a few years experience on me too.
Yeah, and he started.
And he started with jazz very young.
Yes, but it occurs to me that you're still doing what you did with Owen, the organ player. You're listening to stuff and saying, "Yeah, let me see if I can do that."
Oh, sure. Oh, yeah, it's always a work in progress anyway.
Right.
You know, because jazz is pure jazz. Better have some improvisation in it.
Yes.
Otherwise, it ain't
it
jazz.
Ain't jazz.
No,
right?
No, it ain't jazz. It's something else.
Yes.
It's jazzy. It's jazz-like. It sounds like jazz, but it ain't jazz. So, I'm always trying to take some chances, and sometimes the things are going to work exactly as I envisioned them or as I heard them. Sometimes they might not quite work exactly as I planned, quote unquote. It's not quite the right word, but. Exactly as I envisioned it, or heard it in my inner ear, you know?
You know, sometimes...
Because you're dealing with fractions of inches here sometimes in making those moves on the piano keyboard or a jump.
Yeah.
You're dealing... If you're a fraction of an inch off...
You're off.
You're off. You know? So just keep playing that note so it's going to fit.
Sometimes when I'm singing... I'll get this idea of someplace I want to go, and I'll go there, and then I won't be able to find my way back.
Oh, God. This reminds me of a funny, funny, true story that happened a while back.
Mm-hmm.
I was booked to play a concert at the Sarasota Bay Club with Ernie Williford on bass and Johnny Moore on drums.
Mm-hmm.
You know the two of them?
Yes.
Wonderful guys.
Mm-hmm.
Well, here I am. A lot of these people are, you know, 70s and up.
Right.
I started playing There Is No Greater Love, and it was so outside, and I couldn't get back in. The whole concert was like that. The scat singing, everything. Went all the way out there. And I knew I should have been reining it back in, but I couldn't do it, because that thing just got me, and that was it. It was outside and stayed outside.
But you know, I mean, you could probably get away with it.
I got away with it, I think. They did hire us back later on, so I guess I didn't really burn any bridges, although Ernie told me a couple of people were giving me a look like, "What? Do you know what you're doing?
Plan?
Yeah. What in the world are you playing anyway?" Even though I made a point to announce the songs before I played them.
That doesn't mean they knew it. This is so wonderful for me because I think I'm the only person who does that, you know, that I get this idea
and I get lost.
I get lost too.
I get lost, but sooner or later, you know, something clicks.
Mm-hmm.
Something clicks, and you get back there eventually. Somehow.
And sometimes for me, it's the piano player. I get, you know, I just listen to what's being played.
Oh, yeah.
You know, and I go, "Oh, okay, all right, I'll go there."
when we played at the Gator Club, I can remember I used to, you know, start doing my quoting.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and Louie, the drummer, he'd get all in a tizzy because. He'd forget what song we were playing, and Ernie would just say to him, "Just play time, man. Just keep the time going. Don't listen to him. Don't listen to him." have my fun. Mm. If it ain't fun first, why do it?
Well,
that's, you know, really, why do it?
Yeah, I could not agree more. It's a and it seems to me that that's the perfect place to stop this. Mike, this has been so wonderful.
It's been
wonderful.
Fun for me, too.
Thank you very, very much.
Thanks.
So you can hear how much fun we were having. And I hope that it was fun for you, too. I hope that some of the pleasure that we're experiencing is coming through the airwaves and lightening your day. And not only is it lightening the moment that you're listening, but I hope that these interviews are communicating the capacity to trust your instincts, to listen to your intuitions, to know that your unconscious is telling you who you are and what's possible for you. At least to consider the possibility of listening to those little voices, those little impulses, which you may have, you know, heard and discounted, or maybe even figured out not to hear anymore, since we live in such a loud world. Anyway, I'm hoping that these interviews trigger a little bit, a lot, a huge amount of your capacity to surface those parts of yourself which you may have been in denial for. And when you listen to Mike, well, I don't see how it can help but being inspirational. This is someone who was deeply in tune, risking a pun, with himself from the very beginning of his life. He was congruent. He was who he is, virtually from day one, or at least from year three. And that knowledge allowed him to confront, to overcome, to rise to the challenge of the obstacles that life had confronted him with. And as a result, he not only has a life that is built on his passion, on his love, on who he really is, but we have the gift of the glorious music which he creates and shares with us. And I don't know what it is that you would have to offer the world that we don't have, because your life has forced you to force it undercover. The circumstances of your life have made it impossible for you to excavate that part of you which would be a gift not only to you and the life that you could live, but to us. And to make that point again and again and again, I'm going to play a couple of songs before I end the show, a couple more songs from Mike's CD Solid. This is a piano solo. It's Never Neverland, and I thought it was particularly appropriate because it does speak to what is possible. Boys can fly, right? Just imagine it, dream it, wish it, and you can have it. Now, I know it's not that simple. I know it's not that simple. And when you listen to how hard Mike had to work to make his dream come true, you know, you hear it again and again. But in the end, it's worth it. Because even as Mike said at the beginning of this, this show, and at the end of the last one, at least you know you have given it your best shot. So here's Mike playing this beautiful rendition of Neverland, followed by his composition of Blues to Joe Green, an homage to Giuseppe Verdi. I'm going to stop talking and just play Mike. Thank you. now, Mike's composition, Blues for Joe Green. Isn't that wonderful? And I want to say again that the bass player on that cut is Billy Pillicherry, and the drummer is Tony Martin. And the CD is called Solid, and it is by Mike Markovarich. And you can reach Mike by calling him at 941-951-1487, or you can get in touch with him through me. And you can get in touch with me at my website, which is thelynshow.com, thelynneshow. Not only can you get information about Mike and anybody else that you hear on my show by going up on my own website, thelynshow.com, but you can get in touch with Josh. And if you have any needs, electronic, computer, recording, phone, whatever it is, Josh Hackney is the guy. And again, you can get in touch with him by going up on my website. I hope, as always, that you got something from this show that you can use, or something that entertained you, or something that engaged you. In any case, something that made you want to come back and listen again. And I will be here next week, same time, same station, and I sure hope that you will be too.
You see, I'm getting older. My hair is turning gray. Oh, you say my face and figure have both seen better days. Well, I won't be retiring. I won't slip out of sight. No, I will not go gentle into that good night. I won't go with a whimper. I am going with a bang. Life's a song I keep on singing, not a tune that I once sang. I just keep returning like some goddamn boomerang. No, I won't go with a whimper. I am going with a bang. You see that I have had my shot. My time has come and gone. Oh, won't I please get off the stage? Let someone else get on. Well, I won't be relegated or leave without a fight. No, I will not go gentle into that good night. I won't go with a whimper. I am going with a bang. Life's a bell I keep on ringing, not a chime that I once rang. You may think it's unseemly. Well, I don't give a dang. No, I won't go with a whimper. I am going with a bang. Rising from the ashes every chance I get. I may be running out of time, but it ain't over yet. 'Cause me and Sister Phoenix, we won't give up the flight. No, no, we will not go gentle into that good night. And I won't go with a whimper. I'm going with a bang. Life's a song I keep on singing, not a tune that I once sang. I may not be as juicy, hell, but I still got some tang. So you won't hear me simper. I may have gotten